Have you ever felt like walking a tightrope when you have to communicate with a client? Well, today we're diving deep into a case that really shows those challenges, especially with an incarcerated client. It's the Machado v. Statewide Grievance Committee case. And it's a story all about miscommunication and assumptions and, well, a lot of ethical questions.
Yeah, and you know what's really interesting about this case? It shows just how important it is to really check what a representative is allowed to do. Like, you can't just assume someone can make decisions for your client, especially when it's hard to talk to the client directly.
You're absolutely right. And in this case, it involves attorney Arthur D. Machado and his client, Scott V. Adams, who at the time was incarcerated. So because it was hard for him to communicate, Adams asked Machado to work with his representative, Kendra Chihaki. And at first, Chihaki brought the retainer and explained the plan, which was to file for bankruptcy. Pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah, seems simple enough, but this is where things get a bit, well, unexpected. Remember, Adams, the client, wanted bankruptcy protection. That was his goal. But later, Chihaki tells Machado to forget about the bankruptcy and instead focus on getting rid of a tax lien on a business that she and Adams owned together.
And Machado, without talking to Adams directly, just went ahead with the tax lien thing and ended up using the whole retainer on it.
Mm-hmm.
He never told Adams about this big change in strategy or that the bankruptcy was basically abandoned.
Now, this brings up a really important point about agency law and just how much power a representative actually has. Did Chihaki even have the right to change the whole point of the representation? And even if she did, Machado, as a lawyer, had to confirm that with his client.
And to make matters worse, Machado closes his practice without telling Adams, leaving him totally in the dark about his case. I can only imagine how frustrating and abandoned Adams must have felt.
This is exactly where Rules 1.2a and 1.4a of the Rules of Professional Conduct become really important. These rules are all about making sure the client's decisions are respected when it comes to the goals of the representation, keeping them informed every step of the way, and giving them all the information they need to make good decisions.
So basically, Machado really messed up with communication and getting his client's consent, right? But what's interesting is that there's nothing to suggest he was trying to be malicious. He might have actually thought he was doing the best thing for Adams by listening to Chihaki.
That's an important point. It shows that just because you have good intentions, it doesn't mean you're automatically following the ethical rules. Even if you didn't mean to do anything wrong, being negligent can still lead to serious consequences, and you can still break professional rules.
And there were definitely consequences in this case. Adams, who was obviously upset, filed a grievance against Machado.
And that grievance led to Machado getting a formal reprimand. He tried to appeal the decision, first to the Superior Court and then to the Appellate Court, but both courts agreed with the reprimand.
Okay, so we've talked about the facts of the case, but what's the bigger takeaway for everyone working in law? This isn't just about one lawyer messing up, is it? I think there's some broader lessons to learn.
Absolutely. This case really highlights the fact that lawyers have to verify what a representative can actually do, especially when their client is incarcerated or can't easily communicate. You can't just take a third party's instructions without checking with your client directly.
It's kind of like that saying, measure twice, cut once.
Yeah.
But in this case, it would be communicate twice, act once, especially when someone else is involved.
That's a good way to put it. And even though this case had some unusual circumstances, the basic principles apply to all of us. Whether it's family, business partners, or other representatives, we have to remember that the client makes the final decision.
So what would you have done differently if you were Machado?
That's a really good question, and it really gets at how we make ethical decisions in law. If I were Machado, the first thing I would have done is try to contact Adams directly, you know, to make sure Chihaki was actually allowed to change what they were working on. A simple phone call or a letter explaining the change and asking for Adams' permission could have avoided all of this.
Right. And that's where informed consent comes in, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's not enough to just tell the client what's happening. They have to understand what those decisions mean and actually agree to them.
Exactly. Informed consent needs clear and simple communication. In this case, Machado had to explain to Adams in plain English what could happen if they stopped the bankruptcy and focused on the tax lien. He should have talked about other options and made sure Adams knew he had the final say.
So even if Chihaki had good intentions, Machado couldn't just do whatever she said. He had to put his ethical duty to his client first.
Absolutely. And this is super important when you have a client who's in prison because it can be harder for them to communicate and get legal help. Machado should have done even more to make sure Adams understood his rights, maybe even meet him face to face to talk about everything.
It's like you're trying to build trust, especially with someone who might not trust the legal system already.
You got it. Trust is the foundation of the relationship between a lawyer and a client. And to build and keep that trust, you have to communicate clearly and consistently. Now, some people might say that Machado was just trying to be efficient and not waste time, but the courts were very clear that efficiency can't come before ethical obligations.
And that's where those rules we talked about earlier come in again. Rule 1.2a is all about the client being in charge. They decide the goals. The lawyer gives advice on how to achieve them. And Rule 1.4a says you have to keep the client informed about their case and explain things so they can make good decisions.
The courts actually mentioned some interesting cases in their decision. Cases that reinforce the idea that you don't need to prove bad faith to have an ethical violation. For instance, they talked about, in Re Ruffalo, a case that set a precedent for holding lawyers responsible for negligence, even when they didn't mean to do anything wrong.
So it's not just about what you're trying to do, it's also about what actually happens because of what you do.
Exactly. And in Machado's case, the impact was huge. He didn't talk to Adams or get his informed consent, and that meant Adams missed out on bankruptcy protection and felt abandoned and misled. Mm-hmm. It's a big reminder that even small mistakes can have big consequences.
It's almost like a domino effect, where one decision leads to a bunch of unintended consequences.
That's a great way to think about it. It shows how important it is to communicate in advance and think carefully about what could go wrong. If Machado had been more careful about talking to Adams and writing down those conversations, things might have turned out differently.
So documentation is more than just a formality. It's really important for protecting both the lawyer and the client.
You're absolutely right. When you document everything properly, you create a clear record of all the communication, decisions, and actions. It can prove informed consent, show that you're following the ethical rules, and be helpful if there are any arguments or questions later on. Imagine if Machado had a document signed by Adams that said Shahaki could make decisions about the case. That would have changed everything.
It sounds like taking the time to write things down can save you a lot of trouble and potential legal issues down the line. It's about being proactive, not reactive.
Exactly. And it's not just about protecting ourselves as lawyers. It's about making sure our clients' rights are protected and that they feel confident and informed throughout the legal process. Remember, we're lawyers and people trust us and rely on us. They need us to help them navigate the legal system and fight for their best interests.
That's a good point. So to sum up the key takeaways for our listeners, what are the most important lessons from the Machado case?
Well, I think there are three main things to remember. First, always make sure you know what a representative is allowed to do. Don't just assume, confirm. Second, never do more than what you were hired to do without getting your client's clear permission. That means explaining things simply, talking about other options, and documenting everything.
And third, always talk to your client, especially when they're in a situation where it's hard for them to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
Go the extra mile to make sure they understand their rights, their options, and what's happening with their case.
Those three things: verify, consent, communicate. They're not just good ideas. They're essential for being ethical and effective as a lawyer.
And they show that legal ethics isn't just about knowing the rules. It's about using those rules carefully, being diligent, and understanding that every legal case involves real people.
That's a great way to say it. It's about knowing that every case is different, every client is an individual, and ethical decisions require thinking carefully about the specific situation and what could happen.
Knowing about this case, I'm curious. What are some specific things lawyers can do to communicate better with clients in prison, to make sure they feel heard and empowered, even with the limitations they face?
That's a really important question, and it's one we need to think carefully about. Representing clients in prison comes with its own set of challenges, especially when it comes to communicating. But there are things we can do to make it easier to communicate and make sure they get good and ethical representation.
Yeah, like what? What are some things our listeners can actually do in their own practice?
Well, first of all, you have to communicate proactively. Don't just wait for your client to reach out to you. Make an effort to contact them regularly, give them updates on their case, even if there haven't been any big changes.
So don't let their situation stop you from communicating frequently. You take the initiative.
Exactly. And remember, communication goes both ways. Don't just talk at your client. Really listen to their concerns and their questions. And if they're anxious, let them know that their voice matters, even if they're behind bars.
It's about making sure they feel heard.
Right.
Right. Like they have some control, even with the limitations they're dealing with.
Precisely. And think about how you're communicating. Phone calls can be hard to set up and are usually time limited. Letters, though they can be slow, can be a more detailed and personal way to communicate. And if you can, video conferencing can be a more human and interactive option.
So it's about choosing the best way to communicate based on the client and what's available, right?
Absolutely. And always remember that it might be hard for them to respond to you. Don't think that if they don't say anything, it means they're not interested or that they agree with you. Keep following up and be patient while you wait for them to get back to you.
It's about understanding that they don't have a lot of resources, time, or even privacy.
That's right. Now, think about what you're actually saying in your communications. When you're explaining legal stuff, use simple language and avoid jargon or technical terms that might be confusing or scary.
So it's almost like you're translating legal language into everyday language, making sure your client actually gets what's going on with their case.
Exactly. Don't be afraid to repeat things or explain them in different ways to make sure it's clear. Remember, clear communication is really important for building trust, getting their informed consent, and in the end, getting the best possible outcome for your client.
So going back to the Machado case, those things we talked about,
yep.
Verification, informed consent, communication, those are even more important when you have a client in prison. It's like there's even more of an ethical responsibility.
I agree. The challenges that incarcerated clients face make those core ethical principles even more important. It's not just about avoiding getting in trouble. It's about doing our job as lawyers to fight for people who are often overlooked and whose voices can get lost in the complicated legal system.
And with that, I think we've managed to get through the ethical minefield of Machado v. Statewide Grievance Committee. It's been really interesting, even if a little bit unsettling, to look at how complex the relationship between a lawyer and a client can be, and to see how big of an impact even small mistakes can have.
Yeah, it definitely makes you think. It reminds us that to practice law ethically, we need to be careful all the time, think about what could go wrong, and always try to do what's right and expected of us as professionals.
It's about understanding that what we do affects our clients in the real world, and that making ethical decisions isn't a one-time thing. It's something we have to constantly think about and improve on.
I couldn't have put it better myself. And I hope this deep dive has given our listeners the information and the tools they need to deal with those ethical challenges with confidence and integrity.
I hope so too. Because ultimately, it's about making sure every client, no matter their situation, gets good, fair, and compassionate legal representation.
That's right. It's a strong reminder of what justice really means and the important role we play in making sure that happens.